I hope you have heard my talks, you see, if you have followed it. I clearly say there are two aspects of legions. One is the outer, the other is the inner. We have taken steps as an outer aspect of religion, reading of scriptures, saying of prayers, performance of certain rites and rituals. And that has been explained to you, their scope, what they are meant for. Reading of scriptures, if rightly understood with somebody who knows the world, that creates an interest to know God. And that ends there. Saying of prayers and performance of rites and rituals, they are meant for developing love and devotion in us for God. These are good actions, have their own reactions and good results. These are meant for the preparation of the ground. For the other way, which is higher, to be taken up when you rise above body consciousness. All these pertain to the body. These are meant for the preparation of the ground. Remain in some religion. But remain in this, in any religion, and only taking the preliminary steps and not taking the higher, you do not derive full benefit from following that religion. A true Christian is one who sees the light of God. And all others have defined the same way. So what you have been given is not religion, but spirituality. You follow? Spirituality is not religion. Religion is a social body, a school in your giant to attain spirituality. Spirituality, what it is? It is self-analysis of soul from mind and outgoing faculty, knowing oneself and being in tune with God. This is what is, strictly speaking, spirituality. It is no spiritualism, no spiritism, no mesmerism, no hypnotism. So while you follow the first step, when you have been given the higher step, some man came up to me yesterday that he is putting in 3 hours for yoga, hatha yoga. What should he do? Well, go on doing hatha yoga. That will lead you to give you good body. Why not give some time to make your body fit? Not 3 hours. Say half an hour something there to make your body fit. And rest 2.5 hours for this higher purpose. You follow my point? What I say? You have been given to be true Christian. You have been given a contact with the world, which is a lamp unto my feet and light on my path. You have been given something that God manifests in any whom holds. He is the light of the world. They are children of light. When they come to the world, they give all the light to all and everybody. You follow my point? So you are not to leave any religion as a social body. But you have got something higher. No, you get something higher, still you spend your whole time, 24 hours, for that and not for this what you have got. What's the use of having this? I am not changing your religion. If I change, I will have to form a new one. New rules, new regulations, new rights and everything. Why to waste time in that? But only to think because you are a Christian or a Hindu or a Muhammad, you will be just accepted at the court of God, that is 100% wrong. Unless you become true to God, you come in contact with the light of God and follow the masters who came in the past, they gave universal religion, you cannot be accepted at the court of God. You follow me, no man? You remain where you are. Remain, your relations continue. Go to the church, you get the first step with your reference. When they take the effect, you can utilize that time for higher purpose. You have got away. You are not to hate them, you see. You, those who have come in contact with those you have been already, love them. And if you got something higher, tell them friendly, but this is something further way up in our own scriptures, you see. So you are not, when anybody tells you only, compared to, they must make clear the point, you see, that this is the value. We do the sense. If not, you will have to create another religion. What for? Those religions which have stood the test of times, why not remain there? By changing out of forms, etc., does not bring you closer to God, mind that, unless you follow the teachings, what the Master gave. Christ said, if thine eye be single, thy whole body shall be full of light. Did he not say that? He said, I am the light of the world. That Christ lived before Jesus and after too. Christ's power was the God power which manifested that the human power of man, Son of Man. We have great respect for Son of Man, a truth pole that God power. But that continues forever. In the Unity Temple, I gave a talk. Well, I asked him, well, what are your principles? Then he gave me, who was Christ? And there it is given, Christ lived before Jesus. What is the difference between the two? God power, God into special power, world was made flesh and dwelt amongst us. That God power, or the Guru power, or the Master power, or the Christ power is the same. That lives forever, before and after. Their teachings have been universal. So you have got something diamond-like. If you go on like to just, you have business in the silver, you may do if you like, but the diamonds are more valuable. Go on within where you are. You may have contact that no hard and fast truth. If anybody has told you not to leave out all that, I think they have not been able to explain fully what it meant.
You just answered my question before I asked.
No, the facts remain, you see, that will appeal to you. If you have got something very valuable, you still go on with iron work, it is your value. It has its value. These are good actions, I am not underrating them. But these are meant for the preparation of the ground. Use your good fortune and your search after God. God has given you a step further. It is God who has given it. I always tell this, if God manifests in man who can give you a contact to this. So you have to love all, you see. Your friends, tell them you have found something else which was hidden before in our scripture. They'll come round. If you have to just learn to hate them, then where's the love? You say love God, love everybody. But don't be led away, mind that. You are having something else, don't leave it for the sake of. What we do? We stick to the outer casing of walnut and ignore the kernel. But don't do that. You follow me? But I made no religion. Definitely. And now I am going to make any religion. To me, anybody does it, it is. You're going astray, the point, I tell you. This is a truth which is one, has been experienced by one and all. Ever since the world came. Those who knew the truth, they gave up that way. This question was put to my master. He says, Where is Sanna? Why should he not be here? People will be referring to him. Well, I am telling something very important question. It has been explained already so many times, and perhaps you know already, but this is a question here. That we should not ignore the kernel for sticking to the outer covering of the walnut. Make the best use of it. You are not to hate anybody. And especially in the school where you have been, If you got something higher in the very school, what the minister do not know, surely I am not exaggerating. I have come in contact with the ministers of all religions. Majority of them they are ignorant about these higher things. And that is why they never mention. So for that you can tell us there is something more in our own scriptures. See? So in that case, they were also come out. Not change the religion now to found in North East, but a further step in their own, as given in their own scripture. So love for all those who are going on the higher, but others, also God is in them. If you hate them, then who will be? When you found a candle of light, put it not under a bushel, but place it where it can attract the attention of other seekers. So those who are, you are in some church, here I am in some church. If my brothers over there are ignorant, I must never is in our own sister. See? So you have to love for no hatred for none. But don't ignore the diamond wealth. Replace it by the copper or the iron or the silver. This is what I mean to say. I think that point is clear, sir. I tell you honestly, even the bishops do not know what is what. Majority of all religions, not I am telling of the Christians only, but other religions too. Now men of other religions, they direct them to me. For the inner go to him. They are supposed to be knowing God. If they know God, they must give up. They simply give you go on with the first step. That will do. Well, that is wrong, I tell you honestly. If you have only one farm and go on like that, well, a bird in hand is better than two in the bush. Have love for them. But if you don't love them, how will he hear you? By love, you can make anybody understand. By hatred, you can. Nobody will come near you. You will be defaming the work of your own movement. Revival, I would say, not movement, you see. Of the old truth we have forgotten. I think this point is very clear. Yes. Yes, please. As regards reading of scripture. What I have written, I have given a digest of the clean of the inner way up, as given by all scriptures. To the best I know, theoretically, by parallel study of religions and practically. So that is a clean video. You may read them first. If anything on that, I give reference to other scriptures too. You can quote here, such and such also say that. Let it be basic principle which guides you direct. And then you quote, Lord Krishna says so, Christ says so, Buddha says so. But don't make the basis though, because they also form part of other things too. Is it? They have their own rituals, everything. They lay sometimes, on account of ignorance, too much importance to the preparatory step and not mention later. So we have been given what is the digest of the clean. That is your preference. As God's power for the masters, let there be no misunderstanding about it. Dr. Johnson was a missionary. He first went to India to find somebody and could not have went to preach. Came back twice when he went, he had the good fortune to meet our master. He sat at his feet, learned something for 7 years, 6 years. I was there too. Well, he wrote this part of the manuscript form. His spirit was the same as a missionary. Well, Muslims don't know anything, Sikhs don't know anything, these are wrong, such and such men are wrong, this is very dreadful. So 3 copies are made out of that. One was given to me, one was given to Sardar Bahadur Jagat Singh, third was given to Professor Jagmohan Lal. So Professor Jagmohan Lal never returned the manuscript. Sardar Bahadur returned with few pages with too many strictures. He would not listen. If you say any man, you are blind, he won't listen. you simply ask me, well, dear friend, when you lose your eyesight, well, he will listen to you. Now remain the whole thing you are on my shoulder. I tell my master that yes, it's like that, he's done his missing way. Well, missing is wrong, that is wrong, that is ours is the only way, and all others are wrong, this and that. So you may find out to him. I went to him. I told him, well, look here, dear Dr. Johnson, you have done splendid work in bringing out this manuscript, but it appears here and there you are not in the full law of things. That is why you have not been able to do full justice to the work. I would like to know. Then I gave them from the Hindu, from the Mormon literature, from all others, quotations and everything, you see. He revived it. After we on those lines, whatever you have given though, there are some flaws also, anyhow, that was that. When that was revised, that never came to me, after we. But he revised the other part, you see, that is quite, I think, palatable. About this Christianity portion, I told him, you, Dr. Johnson, you must polish it down. It is put in a very drastic way. What did he say, you see? He said, well, my brothers in the West won't wake up until I say that way. That which is spirit was there, you see. So he did not revise it. I found the Christians do not relish that part. That you're very in a drastic way, you see. Now they have revised that. But the revised copy has been issued. So this is the true state of affairs. Now it is up to you to do what you like. Have something what you got very direct and may refer to others. You may utilize the other ones. So other parts are written in the Christianity post, still people don't like it. I've seen one man was going to be initiated. When he read that thing, through the book, he said, I don't like to be initiated. He says, what is the part of initiation? Not the science, you see. So you may read other books if they are undefined. Then you have got something cut and dyed, you see. The first thing. You may refer to others, they know how. Yes, what you want to say?
Regarding
to our diet master. Yes. Kindly explain, where do we stand on the serums and shots and all that sort of thing?
Serum?
From the injections.
Hormones.
Well, look here, there are ways of treatment, you see. If there is something direct on the subject that is not permissible, you know, why is it that some work can be done? Life cannot be prolonged by any man, by any doctor. That is all in free stuff. But you can help it in the other way. And moreover, you will find that the very minimum quantity, then the whole homeopathy should go to war. Because that is people in their quarter, you see. The question is about the intoxication that gives. That very minimum one drop can be intoxicating. But the other way it is too much good. So purposely don't take it for the personal relishing or anything like that, you see. Injection is also based on the principle of homeopathy. Little things play up the whole blood. Avoid as much as you possible by having recourse to others. If there is no other alternative, just let us see. Yes?
Master, I know this really shouldn't happen to people who are seriously dedicated to you, but I would like for you to explain how best to deal with and avert personality clashes which periodically occur. But I would like a little elaboration on that because it does occur.
You know that I always enjoin to keep diary for self-introspection for one and all, including group leaders and everyone. Yes? If we live up to that, there can be no conflict. First thing is, don't think evil of others. Non-violence. By your harsh words. You see? That is the main cause of creating hatred. You can either just tell an old blind man, and then you ask him, "Well, dear sir, when did you lose your sight?" There is a difference between the two. Isn't it? One is harming, the other is not. Similarly, if you find anything wrong in somebody, tell him privately, "Dear friend, this is done not appropriate." And don't broadcast it, don't make parties. Don't go by the ears and the eyes of others. What we do? First we do something, who are attached to you, they form a party. And those are carried tales to others. Like what you say, diseases arise by infections, you see. That infection goes out and they are party. You keep your own diary, but don't think of evil, don't hear evil of others, don't see evil of others, don't speak evil of others. Then naturally if there's anything wrong in others, find out friendly. I think this is the main cause. We simply see, well, we are in authority, we will say, "I have turned you out." Well, who are you to turn anybody out? This is the satsang of the master. All are telling for the sake of the master. If anybody says, one or two, the initiate or anybody, well, then he is not following the instructions of the master. Those in charge, place in charge, they are group leaders, they are given the children for their custody and help. And also, you love one another. If you love another, love knows, others may creep up, but love knows forgiveness and forgetfulness. I think you follow this very principle, there can be nothing. Our words should be kind. Kind words don't cost us anything, but kind words must be imbued with humility. Sometimes we, in our own valley, "Oh, you are, I can do, I can't do these things." Well, these are the things which create all of us. You give, appreciate others' effort, whatever effort is made, more or less. If you give appreciation, the other man is encouraged to help you. You may have the flaws. Those flaws may be pointed out separately, privately, not broadcasted like, because that will make parties, you see. So that is the cause of all friction, which has risen in the past, may arise in the future. If you love Master, you attend satsang for the sake of the Master. The groups in charge should treat you like mothers, I would say. You see? They are not masters, but they have been selected to help you. They also may have some flaws, you see, but their way is not to go away privately because you question whether this appears or not. I hope you will hear me. Even if you are friendly, one or the other, if you tell them privately it is not, or that what is done cannot be undone, for there anybody, that is your own, mistake. That has nothing to do with the teachings of the Master. It is only because you don't follow it, all this friction. If you follow, love Master and all those who go to him, love him. Love knows service and sacrifice. If anything happens, love beautifies everything. Love knows forgiveness and forgetfulness. Isn't it? So even if you follow this very principle, there can be no like that. So as I told you, if you find anything, go to him privately and clarify. You see? Don't block that. That makes parties. That is. Don't hear through the ears of others, don't see through the eyes of others. If only that much is done, you see. Group leaders are there to help, you see. They have great responsibility. All the same, they are helping you. Just sit together, make arrangements, sacrifice their time, their money sometimes, and also labor. They don't want anything returned. But they are, I tell you, they clearly give you understand that master is master, they are not master. Don't mistake that. This is a clarifier. If there is anything, when one man sees, God gives him eye to see the God and the Master is everything. Well, her eyes have been opened. His eye has been opened. He sees that way. Then so why don't you go like that? As I explained to you, everything has its value, you see. Some are of higher value, some are of lower. Fact remains like that. So I appreciate, you see, all of you who are group leaders or others, to just think that way. You sacrifice your time, your something, for what? For higher purpose, to know what. Suppose there is a resentment between the two, he leaves the place and goes away. Then, well, this is not part of the science, because we are all not perfect as yet, you see, we are on the way. Some are more progress, the others less. But you make an allowance for that, you see. Yes, please. But don't forget to attend your group meetings. Mind that. If you leave away that, then you led away. Because there the question is, this lesson is revived. Mind that. You go to church, I don't mind.
Learn mind.
Yes. If you go there, I tell you one thing more. If you find truth anywhere else, tell me, I will also follow you. That's all. Yes,
Master, something very unusual.
Yes, sir.
Happened to me last night at 1 o'clock when I was sleeping.
Yes.
I wake up and heard your voice calling my name.
Yes.
Very, very strong.
That's right.
Is that bad or good? I know it's bad because I couldn't sleep all night. I really ask you because your voice is so strong. I never heard anything in my life before, except knocking on the doors or things like that. But your voice was so clear, calling that the whole room was like a sun.
Yes, I tell you now, as I've said many times, Son of Man is not the Master. Son of Man is the human power at which that God is the Master only who works there. And it is that God power which goes round, awakens all those who are initiated. And also, those who have got some background even appears to them, although they do not know who is who, you see. This is God power. When the man is initiated, that Master power or God power resides with him. Call it Christ power or Guru power. And is ever on the guide to bring him up. If we turn our face to him, he will be guiding you, speaking to you by manifesting himself and otherwise. Once or twice, four times, we don't care, you lose your chance. But still he is there. Whenever you turn your face to him, he is there.
Master, your voice was very clear, and after that, since I couldn't sleep all night, I had very funny and different things in the room, but I just thought there was...
That the best thing was sit in meditation. That's all. It happens sometimes, though you have not seen the form of the Master out of us, they never heard about him for years before they having the manifestation of that form. And they are wondering what is that. Then when they met you, oh, I saw you 3 years back. Well, it is the God power that appears. We are all in the make. That's all. I tell you. In the scriptures, we sometimes find the word soul is dead. In Christian literature also, and others too. What do they mean? Guru Nanak says, only he is alive, O Nanak, who is conscious, become conscious of the divine plan, who knows, sees God. All others are dead. You follow me? Those whose attention is identified with the all outside things that you consider to be a death, but really not death. You see? This is what is meant by all scriptures. Soul is never dead. But when it's your whole attention is absorbed in outer things, material things, it is defined as dead. If you withdraw it, it is already there, but awakens. Listen.
Good morning, and welcome to the Satsang from Master Kripal Singh. The recording you just heard was from a talk and question and answer session given by Master on January 7th, 1964, in Miami, Florida. It was given the name The Things Love Knows. Our reader this morning is Scott Stewart.
Hello, everyone. Today's satsang reading will be a continuation of Master's great work called A Great Saint, Babaji Mal Singh. We will pick up where we left off the last time we read. The orders of moving to Agra had not yet been received when Jaimal Singh applied for annual leave. The leave was granted, but when he reported before departure, his superior informed him that he had to rejoin not at Sagar, but Agra. The sepoy was so overcome with the news that instead of going home, he went straight to Agra. Swamiji received him with great affection, and Radhaji especially prepared halwa to mark the occasion. The great guru regarded him as a Puran Gurmukh, a true disciple, and recited to him some of the mystical poems he had composed during Jaimal Singh's absence from Agra, and which were later collected by Rai Saligram Ji, another noted and distinguished disciple, along with many of his own compositions in the volume entitled Sar Bachan. One of the verses he read referred directly to his disciple, Ye Dadlam Hai Dur Lok Adhurt Ki, Koyi Pukre Sant Sipahi. Translated means, this music streams from a transcendent plane within and is caught by a soldier saint. Jaimal Singh made the most of his time with the master. He attended the satsang regularly and often chanted the verses on which Swamiji was later discoursed. Meanwhile, the 24th Sikh Regiment moved into town, but he continued to stay at Punagali, for he still had some leave to his credit. One night, Swamiji asked him to carry a number of sheets and clothes, accompanying him to a poor locality. There, he personally distributed to the needy, according to their wants, the gifts he had brought for them. The recipients were full of gratitude and enthusiastically thanked and blessed the magnanimous stranger. But Swamiji was not the man to draw praise for himself, even when it was his rightful due. Oh, he exclaimed to those who flocked around him, do not thus burden me with thanks. I am only an agent of my generous master. It is to him that all credit is due. When the nocturnal mission was over, the great teacher turned to his disciple and said, Jaimal, my son, always serve the poor in this way, never claiming anything as your due. Jaimal Singh went back to duty when his annual holiday was over, but he made it a point not to miss any opportunity of visiting his master. He would often arrive at Punagali at noon and stay on till late in the evening. One day, lost in satsang and bhajan, he forgot completely that he was on duty at night. It was early in the morning that he reached the army quarters and went straight to his mate. Have you completed your duty? Asked Bhagwan Singh. Why, was I on duty last night? Ventured Jaimal Singh. Are you being funny? As if I didn't see you going out dressed for duty last night. Jaimal Singh made no further reply. He was musing on the unfailing care of his master and wondering what exactly had happened. If he still had any doubts about the miracle, they were soon dispelled. The Havildar above him, on meeting him shortly after, also referred to his night duty and that his attendance had been duly marked in the night register. As soon as he could get away, he hastened to Punagali and fell at his master's feet. How little we erring mortals deserve the grace you shower on us, he exclaimed, and related the strange happenings of the preceding night. I hope you have not spoken of them to any of your army friends. Sir, I was too dumbfounded to utter a word. Excellent, excellent. Now keep it to yourself. And mark, if any such things ever happen in the future, remember to restrain yourself and not make a public fuss about it. The miracle was to be repeated when a similar situation arose not long after. The year and a half that the 24th Sikh Regiment spent at Agra passed on like a happy dream. Before the regiment departed, Jaimal spent 3 days with Swamiji. On the last day, when he had to bid farewell, he humbly fell at his master's feet. Swamiji raised him from his feet, pressed him fondly to himself, and observed, There is no difference between us whatsoever, for we are alike, permeated with the power of Nam. From Agra, the regiment proceeded to Peshawar, as is the wont in army life. The 24th Sikh Regiment kept moving from one cantonment to another every 2 or 3 years. Among various places at which it was stationed, the most important were Rawalpindi, Abbottabad, Mianmir, near Lahore, and Jhansi, while at last mentioned station, Jamal was promoted to the rank of Naik. In October, 2 years later, he was once again on his way to Agra to spend the annual leave with his guru. Who can describe the beatitude to be experienced at the feet of a divine teacher? The time slipped by, and before he could even realize it, Jamal Singh's day of parting arrived. He went to Swamiji for blessings and to bid him farewell. "This is going to be our last meeting," observed the master. "My mission on earth is almost over. I need hardly repeat that I have cast you in my own mold, and you are of my very essence." When Chanda Singh, who was also at Punigali at the time, heard that Swamiji intended to leave the world in a short while, he exclaimed, "What will become of us?" and begged him to leave someone behind to carry on his work in the Punjab. Swamiji smiled and replied, "Your prayers have already been granted by the Almighty, and Jamal, whom I have already given authority for initiation, has been deputed for the task." Then turning back to Jamal, he said, "But all seekers that come to you on the path of Nam, but see that you steer clear of sects and creeds. Ours is the path of Nanak and Kabir. Whosoever is fired by spiritual zeal, whether of this faith or of that, has a right to it. Carry on in all humility, and whatever you do, do it as a servant of the saints." He then turned to Radha Ji and, placing his hand on Jamal's back, declared, "He is indeed our Gurmukh's son." And taking a saropa, or headdress, he lovingly bestowed it as a parting gift to his apt and faithful disciple. This great love and honor was too much for the humble Gurmukh, and overwhelmed, his eyes were filled with tears. His heart was heavy as he left, thinking of the approaching end of his master's earthly sojourn and the difficult burden that was being placed on his shoulders. From Agra, Jamal Singh returned to his regiment at Jhansi. The rest of his story as a soldier is simply told. It is unnecessary to enumerate the many places at which the 24th Sikh Regiment was stationed from time to time. Whatever happened, wherever he went, Jamal Singh let nothing interrupt the routine of his spiritual sadhanas. Like a lover in the frenzy of love, he was forever centered in the joy of the inner life. Even when his regiment was in action in the northwestern frontier during the Anglo-Afghan War in 1879, he would leave his quarters at night, go into the wilderness, dig a pit, and with his rifle tucked under his knees, get lost in meditation. Enemy snipers would often spot him, but seeing his radiant figure, make out that he was no ordinary soldier, but some great fakir, and leave him untouched. At times when he arose from his sadhana, they would even bow before him in reverence. As Jamal Singh, who had been 18 when he had first entered the army at Agra, grew into a mature man and passed from youth to middle age, he slowly but steadily won the hearts of all around him. At first, some of his companions might have sportively dismissed him as an orthodox non-entity who did not know the art of enjoying life, but was lost in the reading of scriptures and tedious spiritual sadhanas. But as the years passed, they realized that they had among them no ordinary mortal. His prediction to Bhagwan Singh at Sagar of the regiment's next posting got wide currency and won him many admirers. While stationed at Jamrud during the Afghan War, his mate Bhagwan Singh, who had gone with a convoy, suddenly fell ill and died. At the very moment his spirit was leaving its physical frame, Jamal Singh, many miles away, abruptly exclaimed, "Wah wah nipat gaye." Well, well, it is at last over. Indir Singh, who had joined the regiment at Jhansi and had developed an intimate attachment for his reverend senior, becoming his first initiate, was sitting with him. He was not a little surprised by this dramatic outburst and asked his teacher what it meant. Jamal Singh was reluctant to declare himself. "Why bother that which does not concern you?" he said. But when Inder Singh persisted, he told him that Bhagwan Singh had passed away. The young soldier noted the time and date, and when the news of this colleague's death arrived, he found it to be correct. Such strange happenings were not infrequent where Jamal Singh was concerned. And with the passage of time, he became an institution in the regiment. Everyone respected him, and even the English officers held him in great veneration, calling him Lord Bishop. All those spiritually inclined sought his company, and no less than those who suffered from some worldly affliction. Thus, Subedar Karak Singh, who had been married for many years without issue, begged him for the blessing of a child. Jamal Singh observed that he was not destined to have a child, but when Karak Singh continued to press him, his prayer was granted. The child was born, but the happy father failed to give away in charity the sum of ₹500 which Jamal had strictly enjoined him to distribute. Not long after, the Subedar fell seriously ill. Jamal Singh was called, but he said that it was too late now and the evil was past any remedy. A few days later, Karak Singh passed away. Was it mere chance or was it because of Jamal Singh that the members of the 24th Sikhs showed an extraordinary interest in spiritual matters? It is not an unusual phenomenon that the true holy men spread an aura of peace wherever they are, drawing the devotees of the Lord toward themselves and influencing those around them. This regiment became known for its religious inclinations, and many a sadhu would pay it a visit wherever it was stationed. Jamal Singh was always invited whenever any sadhu paid a visit to the regimental center, or when any of its members went forth to meet them. When once some of the young Sikh soldiers had to be baptized as adults into their faith, he was unhesitatingly chosen to conduct the ceremony and gave an illuminating discourse on the inner spiritual significance of the ritual. His recitations from scriptures began gradually to be attended by more and more people. And in later years, Jamal Singh, who by then had come to be popularly addressed as Babaji, Baiji, or Sant Sipahi, often discoursed briefly on their true import. His magnetic personality, his impeccable character, his spiritual mastery, and his growing fame gradually drew around him a small circle of very devoted followers from the regiment, men like Inder Singh, Bhaga Singh, Bhagwan Singh, etc., who became his earliest initiates. But Baba Jamal Singh's military career was conspicuous not only for its rigid adherence to a high spiritual ideal, but also for his equally remarkable performance in the field of army duties. True to his master's behest, Jamal Singh was extremely regular in his official routine. Nothing could keep him away from his work, except perhaps his absorption in the divine, on which occasion Swamiji miraculously filled up the gap. He was known for his honesty and impartiality, and though a strict vegetarian himself, did not hesitate to have meat distributed to his fellows as duty-bound when once he was called upon to do so. Once an officer asserted that his vegetarianism was in all probability undermining his capabilities as a soldier and suggested that he should take a non-vegetarian food to develop more stamina and muscle. Jamal Singh was unconvinced and challenged any meat-eating toughs to surpass him on the field. He was later requested to explain the grounds for his abstinence and gave a full discourse to the entire regiment, developing at length the reasons why meat should be avoided and exploding the popular myth that vegetarian food is in any way deficient in vitality. His service role, covering 34 years of active service, proves the truth of his assertion. It records not a single instant of hospitalization. Like a great guru, Jamal Singh was unassailable, both in swartha and paramartha, worldliness and godliness. His exemplary regularity, sobriety, and courage, his readiness to shoulder responsibilities, and his honest discharge of all his duties, for all his quietness and unobtrusiveness, did not go unnoticed. In January 1869, he was awarded a medal for the rank of Naik while at Jhansi. In Myanmar, on the same day, 3 years later, he became a Havildar. And when the 24th Sikhs were at Multan from 1880 onward for 3 years, he received a second medal for loyal and meritorious service. He retired on 15th August 1889 after full 34 years of faithful and credible service. And when he made his regiment farewell, the hearts of all were heavy, juniors, colleagues, and seniors, for they lost in him not just a steady, hard-working comrade, but a friend, a teacher. He taught Gurmukhi to the officers in what is far rarer, an unfailing and inspiring moral and spiritual guide. The accounts of Babaji left by his army colleagues and others are of a piece with the rest of his life and character. Reading through them, we learn of a man who, while lost in divine mysteries, was yet not lost to the world. A fellow soldier who happened to be placed under him while he was a Havildar was surprised that in all the 3 years they were together, he did not once notice or hear of his being out of temper. He was always sweet-spoken and refrained from harshness and vulgarity. All his life he remained a strict vegetarian and equally strict teetotaler. And to these we may add his rigid brahmacharya, for he remained a celibate all his years. Wedded to devotion to God, he never experienced the urge to marry, and stoutly resisted any attempt to cajole him into matrimony. When his youngest brother, Jiwan Singh, also entered the army and expressed his desire to marry, Jamal Singh did not object, but only said, "Why enter into this web when our family is not destined to continue?" Jiwan Singh was married, and a year later his son was born, who died shortly, followed by his mother. Dan Singh, the second brother, who managed the farm, also had no issue. And Jamal's prediction was thus fulfilled. Other qualities that marked Jamal Singh out of the general run of men, including an inexhaustible capacity for service, charity, and generosity. Like Swamiji, he often distributed clothes and other necessities to the needy and the wretched. He had no enemies and looked upon all as friends. His love, however, was especially directed to the poor, and even more so to sadhus and devotees of the Lord. While others were idling or busy with sport, he sought out the company of such devotees, ministering to their needs or discussing spiritual problems. Neither in his army life nor even afterward did he distinguish between creed and creed, but treated all, Muslims, Christians, Sikhs, or Hindus, on an equal footing. While ever ready to help materially or spiritually, he always avoided the limelight. Even as a child, he had been known for his modesty, his shyness even being sometimes made a subject of ridicule. If he met sadhus, he contented himself with listening to what they said. He rarely contradicted or criticized. If he met a genuine seeker, he was ready enough to discuss and explain, but he attributed whatever he knew not to any virtue in himself, but to the grace of his peerless master. His dress and appearance were as simple yet elegant as the man himself. Of medium height, some 5 feet and 6 inches, he was sturdily built. He had a knotty protrusion on his forehead above the right eye and a lotus mark, symbolic of true spirituality, on the sole of his right foot. He had fine features, wheatish complexion, and a glowing face whose ruddy color was set off by a rich, freely flowing beard which retained its lustrous blackness to the very end, except for a few straggling streaks of white. When not in army uniform, he wore a white turban, and in jat style, a white muslin kurta, loose skirt, and tight-fitting pajamas of the same color. While in his quarter, informally, among his fellows, he would usually wrap a khadi sheet about himself, tucking it on the left side, covering his hair, which when unloosed fell to his waist, with a towel, and move about in carrion, wooden sandals, or juti, Indian shoes. He was simple in his habits and frugal in his needs. Milk was his favorite item of food, and he was particularly fond of goat's milk. He spent little upon himself, and his earnings were mostly spent in charity or in sending allowances to his brothers. Next chapter, The Torch Bearer. Baba Jamal Singh, on retiring as a government pensioner from the army, decided to visit the home of his incomparable master. Swamiji had passed away in 1878, as he had himself foretold, but Babaji was greatly attached to his family and his disciples. So in 1890, he took train for the old Mughal capital. On reaching there, proceeded straight to Punigali. Radhaji was overjoyed to see Swamiji's beloved disciple once more, while Chacha Partap Singh, his youngest brother, gave him a cordial welcome. Word was sent to Baba Garib Das, then apparently at Agra, and he hastened to meet the great soul from the Punjab. Who can describe the deep joy that was theirs as they greeted and embraced each other and remembered the great master, who, no longer in this physical plane, was yet spiritually ever with them? Who can fathom the feelings of such master spirits? The old spiritual comrades radiated love as they greeted each other, and to see them meet was itself a lesson in the truth that God is love. Radhaji brought forth a red turban and an asan, or prayer carpet, which Swamiji had left with her before passing away, as his last gift to his Gurmukh disciple. Chacha Partap Singh then brought a gadi and begged Babaji to be seated, but he would not hear of it and commenting, "I am only a dog of this house, blessed to be admitted within its walls," kept standing. Chacha Partap Singh protested and persisted, but to no avail. At last, Radhaji intervened and ended the controversy by saying, "Jamal Singh is indeed a Kautau, worthy son of Swamiji, who has made the most of the capital entrusted to him. He has bestowed him with the lordship of Sat Lakh, so why should he care for earthly gaudis?" When meals were over, Babaji insisted on washing the utensils. "This home for me is a temple, for it was here that I got enlightenment. My only ambition is to serve this house." But Radhaji would not hear of it. "You may do as you please some other day," she declared, "but today you must abide by what I say." Next day, accompanied by Chacha Partap Singh and Baba Garib Das, Baba Jamal Singh Ji proceeded to Rai Saligram, a beloved disciple of Swamiji, who had been entrusted after him with the work at Agra and carried on his discourses at Pipal Mandi, where he was popularly known as Hazur Maharaj. He rejoiced at the visit and received the honored guest from Guman with respect and affection. The two embraced, after which Hazur Maharaj drew Babaji toward the gadi on which he had been sitting in order to seat him next to himself. But with characteristic humility, he declined the honor and seated himself on the floor. The third day, Hazur Maharaj presented Babaji with a rich silken robe embroidered with gold. He, however, would not hear of it. "What has a simple farmer like me to do with such precious fabrics? Gaudi suits me better." "How can you say such things?" protested the host. "When Swamiji was made you of a king of spirituality, entrusted you with his mission in the Punjab." Seeing that, Babaji would not give way. He finally suggested, "Very well, if you will not accept this robe, at least do me the honor of putting it on once, after which I would keep it as a prized souvenir." On hearing this, Chacha Partap Singh declared that he had a prior right and should be allowed to have the dress after Baba Jamal Singh had donned it. At last, Radhaji stepped in and interceded. How could Jamal Singh resist any longer? Such love, such honor. What mortal could deserve it? It was all the grace of his master. With tears in his eyes, he took the robe from Radhaji's hands and placed it reverently on his head, reciting the verses from the Granth Sahib, beginning, "Mayan av gun, gun naim koi. I am unworthy, and no virtue is in me." A week passed in this fashion, and having paid his homage to the place where he had received spiritual illumination, Baba Jamal Singh prepared to depart. He invited Baba Garib Das to join him, and the latter graciously accepted the invitation. The party set forth for the Punjab, and when they arrived at Guman, scriptural recitations and discourses were arranged in their honor. Jiwan Singh's marriage was at hand, and there was feasting and rejoicing. The villagers keenly enjoyed the talks given by the two spiritual friends, and the days rolled by till Baba Garib Das had to leave. Jamal Singh accompanied him to the Bayas railway station and bade him a touching farewell as he left by train. Babaji continued to be on very friendly terms with Swamiji's disciples and with the members of his family. There was great mutual respect and esteem, and Babaji's visit to Muri in 1894 was made at the invitation of some Agra satsangis. But after the passing away of Hazur Maharaj Rai Saligram Ji, things began to undergo a change. A move was made to bring all activities under the control of Pandit Brahm Shankar Misra, alias Maharaj Shai. Through the creation of a central administrative council at Swamibagh, Babaji was nominated along with nine others for the first panel of the council. The letter sent to Baba Jamal Singh by Chacha Partap Singh from Allahabad on the occasion, dated 4th August 1902, nominating him as such is on record. Footnote: Chacha Partap Singh Ji's letter dated August 4, 1902, beloved of the Sadguru, purified by Shabd, pure of face and intellect, Baba Jamal Singh Ji, I have received your letter and was very glad to read its contents, and the stone which you suggested will be put in the building. You may be assured about that. My son Suchit Singh has come back on pension. Continuing, I am, however, sorry to note that there is a tendency of forming different sects and cliques in our satsang, and that all satsangis are not in harmony with each other. For this purpose, I have come here to Allahabad. We have decided that a Radha Swami Satsang Central Association should be started. Pandit Ji, Brahm Shankar Misra, has insisted that I should be its president, and he will be the vice president. That Lala Ajodhya Prashad, son of Hazur Saib Maharajam, Rai Bahadur Saligram, and eight others, as well as yourself, should be members, or in whatever manner any 10 members can be selected by the satsangis by a vote of majority. I am therefore sending you a pamphlet containing a complete description about this central association and can send you any number of copies as may be required. Please send instructions to all your satsangis that they should sanction the following 10 names and endorse these pamphlets in token of their nomination. If you have satsangis in far-off places, they should also be asked to act accordingly. I am giving below the names of the 10 members referred to above. Lala Ajodhya Prashad, son of Rai Saligram. Pandit Brahm Shankar Misra Sahib. Lala Balishwar Parshad, Lala Madho Parshad, Rai Ishwar Sahai alias Rajasaid, Lala Suchet Singh, son of Chacha Partap Singh, Baba Jamal Singh Ji Saeed, Lala Surdashan Singh, another son of Pratap Singh, Munshi Hargobind Daya Saeed, and number 10, Mr. Bool Chand Saeed. It is expected that by the constitution of this society, different groups and cliques will disappear and satsangis will love each other as brothers. Kindly send this letter to Baba Sawan Singh also for his information. Babaji, however, was reluctant to join the council as he felt the changes that were taking place about this time among the Agra satsangis were not in consonance with Swamiji's teachings. He also objected to and opposed Maharaj Saib's plan for building a magnificent samad in memory of Swamiji, because he felt that so humble a spirit as his master would never have countenanced such a project. When he went to Agra about this time, he openly explained his point. But Maharaj Saib was not to be dissuaded. Finding himself no longer well received and his words of no avail, he returned to Bayaz and decided to remain aloof from the activities of the council at Swamibagh. We have come to the end of our time for this reading. We were reading Master's great work, A Great Saint, Baba Jamal Singh. We thank you, Master, for this chance to commune in your readings, and we pray, as always, that we're thankful, forever grateful, and will consistently live up to what you ask of us.
Thank you, Scott, for reading for us. There were 78 people at today's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
So always abide what your Master says, the God in him. So whether people admire you or not, don't care for them. So you must abide by the teaching, by the saying, by the orders of the Master to live up to it. Irrespective of the world, admire you or otherwise.